Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day. What to know about Chelsea Manning ahead of the whistleblower's release from prison? By Melissa Chan. Chelsea Manning, an ex-Army soldier convicted of leaking a trove of secret U.S. documents, is set to be released from prison on May 17th, about 4 months after former President Obama drastically shortened her sentence just before he left office. The former intelligence analyst was convicted of espionage after admitting to illegally sending hundreds of thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks. She received a 35-year prison sentence in 2013 and came out as a transgender woman shortly afterward. Manning has been counting down the days until her freedom after serving more than a half dozen years behind bars, where she has twice attempted suicide. "For the first time, I can see a future for myself as Chelsea," she wrote in a statement ahead of her release. "I can imagine surviving and living as the person who I am and can finally be in the outside world." Here's what you need to know about the whistleblower saga. Who is she? Chelsea Manning was an intelligence analyst for the U.S. Army when she disclosed more than 700,000 confidential military and diplomatic documents while serving in Iraq in 2010, according to the Associated Press. The Oklahoma-born Manning wrote in an op-ed published by the New York Times in 2014 that her decision to do so stemmed from a love for her country and a sense of duty to others. Manning said she was trying to offer more transparency about America's involvement with Iraq, particularly in regards to the country's elections. She said media reports painted a picture at odds with reality due to limits the U.S. placed on American journalists. Manning joined the Army in 2007 and was deployed to Iraq about 2 years later. What happened after the leak? Manning was arrested in 2010 and admitted her actions were illegal. She was convicted and sentenced in 2013 for Espionage Act violations and other offenses related to the massive leak, according to the AP. That year, she came out as a transgender woman at a men's prison at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. She sued the Department of Defense in 2014 with help from the ACLU, claiming the federal agency was refusing to give her medical treatment for her gender dysphoria. Manning said the lack of care drove her to try to commit suicide at least twice and prompted her to go on a hunger strike. The Department of Defense granted Manning hormone treatment in 2015, the AP reports. Last September, Manning said the military told her it would be moving forward with honoring her request for gender reassignment surgery, allowing her to see a surgeon. Manning tried to commit suicide a month later while in solitary confinement, a punishment imposed after her first suicide attempt in July, according to the Times. Why is she being released early? The 29-year-old Manning gets to leave prison almost 3 decades before her sentence is up because Obama in January commuted her sentence to end on May 17th. More than 100,000 people had called for the presidential commutation in a White House online petition. Manning had also pleaded for leniency from Obama, writing in a Medium post last year that she was merely asking for a first chance to live my life outside the prison as the person I was born to be. Manning's attorney at the ACLU said Obama's decision no doubt saved Manning's life. Delays in her treatment were breaking her, and they likely would have killed her, Chase Strangio, an attorney with the ACLU's LGBT and AIDS project, said in a statement. "Instead of certain death, it will be a chance at life," he said. While her conviction is being appealed, Manning will remain on active duty after her release, which makes her eligible for health coverage but not pay, Army spokesman Dave Foster told USA Today. Manning has become an advocate for free speech, transparency, and LGBT rights. In an Amnesty International podcast, written by Manning but voiced by transgender actor Michelle Henley, Manning expressed hope of one day being able to help others like herself outside of prison. "I feel like I've been stored away for all this time without a voice," she said in the message. "I feel like there's so much of a contribution to society that I could be making. I spend every day looking forward to the hope that one day I can give that a go." Manning has appeared to be in good spirits while anticipating a return to normalcy. "The nightmare will end soon," she tweeted last month. "Never stop dreaming." The White House is downplaying a report that Trump shared classified intelligence with the Russians. By Deb Reichman for the Associated Press in Washington. President Donald Trump revealed highly classified information to senior Russian officials during an Oval Office meeting last week, putting a source of intelligence on the Islamic State at risk, The Washington Post reported. The disclosure late Monday drew strong condemnation from Democrats and a rare rebuke of Trump from some Republican lawmakers. White House officials denounced the report, saying the president did not disclose intelligence sources or methods to the Russians, though officials did not deny that classified information was disclosed in the May 10th meeting. "The president and the foreign minister reviewed a range of common threats to our two countries, including threats to civil aviation," said H.R. McMaster, Trump's national security advisor. At no time were intelligence sources or methods discussed, and the president did not disclose any military operations that were not already publicly known. The Post, citing current and former U.S. officials, said Trump shared details about an Islamic State terror threat related to the use of laptop computers on aircraft with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Russian Ambassador to the U.S. Sergei Kislyak. "The ambassador has been a central player in the snowballing controversy surrounding possible coordination between Trump's campaign and Russia's election meddling." The anonymous officials told the Post that the information Trump relayed during the Oval Office meeting had been provided by a U.S. partner through an intelligence-sharing arrangement. They said it was considered so sensitive that details have been withheld from allies and tightly restricted even within the U.S. government. The New York Times and BuzzFeed News published similar reports later Monday. The revelations could further damage Trump's already fraught relationship with U.S. intelligence agencies. He's openly questioned the competency of intelligence officials and challenged their high confidence assessment that Russia meddled in last year's presidential election to help him win. His criticism has been followed by a steady stream of leaks to the media that have been damaging to Trump and exposed an FBI investigation into his associates' possible ties to Russia. The disclosure also risks harming his credibility with U.S. partners around the world ahead of his first overseas trip. The White House was already reeling from its botched handling of Trump's decision last week to fire James Comey, the FBI director who was overseeing the Russia investigation. The revelation also prompted cries of hypocrisy. Trump spent the campaign arguing that his opponent, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, should be locked up for careless handling of classified information. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson also disputed the Post report. He said Trump discussed a range of subjects with the Russians, including common efforts and threats regarding counterterrorism. The nature of specific threats was discussed, he said, but not sources, methods, or military operations. The Post said the intelligence partner had not given the United States permission to share the material with Russian officials. By doing so, Trump would have jeopardized cooperation from an ally familiar with the inner workings of the Islamic State group and make other allies, or even U.S. intelligence officials, wary about sharing future top-secret details with the president. Afterward, White House officials took steps to contain the damage, placing calls to the CIA and the National Security Agency, the newspaper said. The CIA and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence declined to comment Monday evening. Congressional Republicans and Democrats expressed concern about the report. GOP Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, told reporters the Trump White House has got to do something soon to bring itself under control and order. "The shame of it is there's a really good national security team in place, and there are good productive things that are underway through them and through others," Corker said. "But the chaos that's being created by the lack of discipline, it's creating an environment that I think makes... it creates a worrisome environment." Senator John McCain, Republican Arizona, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, said that if the story is true, it would be deeply disturbing. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York also called the story disturbing, adding, "Revealing classified information at this level is extremely dangerous and puts at risk the lives of Americans and those who gather intelligence for our country." Reaction from Democrats on the House and Senate Intelligence Committees was full-throated. Representative Adam Schiff of California called the story deeply disturbing and said if it's true, the disclosure could jeopardize sources of very sensitive intelligence and relationships with key allies. Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon, said, "These reports, if true, are of the gravest possible concern. It could harm our national security by cutting off important sources of intelligence that protect Americans against terrorist acts." The controversy engulfed the White House. Reporters spent much of the evening camped out adjacent to Press Secretary Sean Spicer's office, hoping for answers. At one point, an eagle-eyed reporter spotted a handful of staffers, including Spicer and Deputy Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, walking toward the cabinet room. Muffled yelling was heard coming from the area near the room, but after a reporter tweeted about the noise, press staffers quickly turned up their television volume, blasting the sound to drown out everything else. Associated Press writers Julie Pace, Vivian Salama, Catherine Lucy, Jill Colvin, and Ken Thomas contributed to this report.
Why Barre Class is So Good for Your Body by Markham Hyde. In ballet training, the barre, or barre, is the horizontal handrail dancers grip while perfecting their technique. Barre-style workouts take those classic ballet warm-up exercises and reimagine them for a much wider audience. While it may seem like a recent phenomenon, barre strength and flexibility training have been in vogue since the times of Louis XVI, says Ginny Wilmerding, a research professor at the University of New Mexico. The modern-day version is primarily a leg and butt workout. From your ankles and calves up through your knees, hips, and glutes, barre movements are all about improving range of motion, strength, and flexibility in your lower half by forcing one of your legs to perform graceful and precise movements while the other supports and stabilizes you, she says. The sales pitch for all of that excruciating precision is that if you want a dancer's body, you should train like a dancer. I mean, who doesn't want to look like a prima ballerina, says Michelle Olson, a professor of exercise physiology at Auburn University, Montgomery. You're talking about nice, lean muscle tone and perfect posture. But just as going to football practice won't make you look like a linebacker, barre training is more likely to help you achieve a ballerina's muscle endurance and balance than her body shape. Those are valuable assets that do not come with every workout. Unlike muscle strength, endurance determines your muscle's ability to work for long periods of time. Strength may allow you to lift a weight, but muscle endurance dictates how many times you can lift it. Barre is also effective at targeting the support and steady muscles that run close to your bones and tie into your core and spine, the ones most of us neglect when we spend a lot of time sitting or engaged in forward and backward activities like running, says Olson. Real 360-degree balance involves a lot of those side-to-side muscles a lot of us don't use much, and so they become weak, she says. Barre is also low impact and has a built-in handhold, making it a relatively safe form of exercise. Especially for older people at risk for falls, barre may be a good way to improve stability and avoid accidents. But the workout is not without risks, especially for the back and knees. One example. Ballerinas are taught to tuck the pelvis so that the low back that normally curves inward loses its curve and looks straight, Olson says. While dancers do that for their art, tucking the pelvis can lead to back pain and injuries for the average exerciser. Most barre classes have abandoned that sort of strict pelvis tucking, but Olson says some classes still include extreme pile knee bends that can increase a person's risk for knee injury. Especially if you decide to go for a run right after your barre class. The excessive amount of pressure that some barre moves place on your knees could lead to sprains or strains. There are some things dancers do that others have no need for, says Wilmerding, who advises to take the training slowly and to focus on form rather than trying to get an intense muscle or cardio workout from the practice. Like Tai Chi, You're working on stability and flexibility and strength, but you have this higher goal of control and aesthetics. Another point to keep in mind is that even though bar class brings a good core workout, you may be torching fewer calories than you think. One of the few published studies that has looked at bars' cardiovascular and metabolic demands found that the activity, at least in its traditional form, doesn't burn many calories and more closely resembles walking than running in terms of its intensity. Like any form of exercise, I think you need some variety, Olson says. Do it 3 to 5 times a week if you want to get the most out of it, but do something different with a cardiovascular component on the other days. See Who You're Most Likely to Marry Based on Where You Live by Chris Wilson. When Wisconsinites choose a spouse, there's just something about those Minnesotans that they find irresistible. That's just one observation from a recent time analysis of which states were most compatible when it comes to marriages. To figure this out, we examined data on 116 million interstate marriages in which the partners were born in different states. For people from each state, we looked at the most common home states for their spouses compared to the national average. While people are generally most likely to marry someone from the same home state as themselves, eat local and marry local, you might say, those who chose a spouse born in a different state don't tend to drift very far. The map included in this article compares marital rates to the national averages so that the results are not weighted toward high population states. Otherwise, just about everyone's sole state would be California. Some of those bonds are stronger than others. While Michiganders are about equally likely to pair off with someone from Wisconsin, Ohio, or Indiana, people from Utah and Idaho share a deep mutual connection. If you were born in Utah, for example, you are 15 times more likely to marry an Idahoan than someone from elsewhere, a bond that may be strengthened by the fact that they have the largest concentrations of Mormons, according to a 2013 Gallup poll. Vermont and New Hampshire are even more attached at the border. On the other hand, most connections between states are not mutual. While a person from South Dakota has the most disproportionate chance of marrying someone from North Dakota, no surprise there, the North Dakotans have a slightly higher penchant for marrying Minnesotans, as do those from Wisconsin. Likewise, Mississippi is the sole state for those born in Tennessee, Louisiana, and Alabama. And while distance may make the heart grow fonder, there's a limit to how far people will fly. Hawaii's sole state is California, and Alaska's is Washington State. In both cases, the closest state in the continental United States.
Exercise Makes You Younger at the Cellular Level by Amanda McMillan. The more exercise people get, the less their cells appear to age. In a new study in preventive medicine, people who exercised the most had biological aging markers that appeared 9 years younger than those who were sedentary. Researchers looked at the telomeres from nearly 6,000 adults enrolled in a multi-year survey run by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. People were asked what physical activities they'd done in the past month and how vigorously they did them. They also provided DNA samples from which the researchers measured telomere length. Telomeres, the protein caps on the ends of human chromosomes, are markers of aging and overall health. Every time a cell replicates, a tiny bit of telomere is lost, so they get shorter with age. But they shrink faster in some people than in others, explains study author Larry Tucker, professor of exercise science at Brigham Young University. We know that, in general, people with shorter telomeres die sooner and are more likely to develop many of our chronic diseases, says Tucker. It's not perfect, but it's a very good index of biological aging. After adjusting for smoking, obesity, alcohol use, gender, race, and other factors, Tucker found in his study that people who exercised the most had significantly longer telomeres than those who were sedentary. The most sedentary people had 140 fewer base pairs of DNA at the ends of their telomeres compared to the most active, a difference of about 9 years of cellular aging, he says. To qualify as top-tier exercisers, people had to do the equivalent of at least 30 to 40 minutes of jogging a day, 5 days a week. Doing less was also linked to aging benefits, but they were not as powerful. People who did vigorous exercise had telomeres that signaled about 7 fewer years of biological aging compared to people who did moderate levels of activity. Tucker says he was surprised to see so big of a difference between moderate and high levels of exercise. Moderate exercise was still valuable and it had some benefit, but it was really those high levels of physical activity that made the real difference, says Tucker. The top exercisers were vigorously working out 150 to 200 minutes a week or engaging in light to moderate intensity activity for longer periods. Research continues to suggest that more exercise means deeper reductions in risk for chronic disease to a certain point. The current study relied on self-reports about physical activity and was only able to show an association, not a cause and effect relationship, between exercise amount and telomere length. It wasn't able to account for factors like depression, stress, sleep disturbances, and dietary practices that could affect exercise habits, genetic changes, or both. But a link between physical activity and cellular aging makes sense, says Tucker. Experts believe that telomere length may be linked to inflammation and oxidative stress, both of which exercise has been shown to ease over time. While there's no guarantee that people with longer telomeres will live longer, healthier lives, the odds may be in their favor, says Tucker. We all know people who seem younger than their actual age, he says. We know exercise can help with that, and now we know that part of that may be because of its effect on our telomeres. The Real Time Cover Behind That Fake Ice Age Report by Lily Rothman. Apparently, an effective hoax is like an old soldier. It never dies, it merely fades away to resurface later. The latest example of that phenomenon is a Politico report from Monday morning about how fake news can make its way to President Donald Trump. The story related an anecdote in which Deputy National Security Advisor K.T. McFarland reportedly presented the president with a printout that included an image of a 1970s Time cover predicting a coming ice age. The problem? That cover never existed. It's far from the first time that particular hoax cover has made news. A few years ago, at another moment when it was making the rounds, Brian Walsh explained the science behind the fake news. The meme in question shows the supposed 1977 Ice Age cover on one side and a real 2006 cover story about global warming on the other. The takeaway is that even the most confident reporting on global warming might be negated soon. The hoax does touch on an important part of climate science and one that's often misunderstood by skeptics. Call it the Ice Age fallacy, Walsh wrote. Skeptics argue that back in the 70s, both popular media and some scientists were far more worried about global cooling than they were about global warming. For some reason, a Newsweek article on the next ice age, published back in 1975, gets a lot of the attention, though Time did a version of the story, as did a number of other media outlets. The rationale goes this way. The fact that scientists were once supposedly so concerned about global cooling, which didn't come true, just shows that we shouldn't worry about the new fears of climate change. But while some media outlets in the 70s did report on that idea of global cooling, actual science from the time, though not as developed as today's science on global warming is, generally predicted just the opposite, global warming. In fact, scientists had already been thinking about global warming for decades at that point. As Walsh pointed out, the doctored cover isn't entirely invented. The background image of the penguin does come from a real issue from 2007. One easy giveaway, compare the range of Time covers from 2007 to those from 1977. You don't have to be a graphic designer to see that the penguin photo is not something that would have appeared on the front of the magazine 40 years ago. The real story, written by Jeffrey Kluger, was an examination of the things that could be done to combat global warming. It was probably always too much to believe that human beings would be responsible stewards of the planet, Kluger wrote. We may be the smartest of all the animals, endowed with exponentially greater powers of insight and abstraction, but we're animals all the same.
That means that we can also be short-sighted and brutish, hungry for food, resources, land, and heedless of the mess we leave behind trying to get them. And make a mess we have. If droughts and wildfires, floods and crop failures, collapsing climate-sensitive species, and the images of drowning polar bears didn't quiet most of the remaining global warming doubters, the hurricane-driven destruction of New Orleans did. Dismissing a scientist's temperature chart is one thing. Dismissing the death of a major American city is something else entirely. What's more, the heat is only continuing to rise. This past year was the hottest on record in the U.S. The deceptively normal average temperature this winter masked record-breaking highs in December and record-breaking lows in February. That's the sign not of a planet keeping an even strain, but of one thrashing through the alternating chills and night sweats of a serious illness. The UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change issued a report on the state of planetary warming in February that was surprising only in its utter lack of hedging. Warming of the climate system is unequivocal, the report stated. What's more, there is very high confidence that human activities since 1750 have played a significant role by overloading the atmosphere with carbon dioxide, hence retaining solar heat that would otherwise radiate away. The report concludes that while the long-term solution is to reduce the levels of CO2 in the atmosphere, for now we're going to have to dig in and prepare, building better levees, moving to higher ground, abandoning vulnerable floodplains altogether. When former Vice President Al Gore made his triumphant return to Capitol Hill on March 21st to testify before Congress on climate change, he issued an uncompromising warning. We do not have time to play around with this. Some lingering critics still found wiggle room in the UN panel's findings. I think there is a healthy debate ongoing, even though the scientists who are in favor of doing something on greenhouse gases are in the majority, says Republican Congressman James Sensenbrenner of Wisconsin. But when your last good position is to debate the difference between certain and extra certain, you're playing a losing hand. The science, says Christine Todd Whitman, former administrator of the EPA, now is getting to the point where it's pretty hard to deny. Indeed, it is. Atmospheric levels of CO2 were 379 parts per million, ppm, in 2005, higher than at any time in the past 650,000 years. Of the 12 warmest years on record, 11 occurred between 1995 and 2006. So if the diagnosis is in, what's the cure? Daughter of Trump attorney Michael Cohen says lingerie tweet criticism is degrading, by Alana Abramson. The daughter of President Trump's longtime attorney Michael Cohen defended her father after he posted a photograph of her modeling lingerie on Twitter. To try to paint my family as incestual is degrading and downright disgusting, Samantha Cohen told Time in an emailed statement. Regardless of what my parents' profession is, it's incredibly inappropriate for the press to get me, a young woman, involved in this political drama, wrote Cohen. This is an example of the media blowing things out of proportion and using an easy target, a young woman, as a vehicle to tear down other young women. On Sunday, Cohen, who served as an executive in the Trump Organization and appeared on cable television for the president during his campaign, posted a photograph of his daughter on Twitter with a link to her Instagram account. So proud of my Ivy League daughter, brains and beauty channeling her Edie Sedgwick, he wrote. The photograph was of his daughter posing in a bra and underwear. The tweet had more than 2,500 responses by Monday afternoon, many of which criticized Cohen, often in unprintable language, and to which he responded. Various outlets covered the controversy. Cohen derided the media for blowing the tweet out of proportion and said that she had been asked to model for a photographer after finishing a rough semester. Her father, she said, was simply posting them on social media because he was proud of the homage to Andy Warhol and Edie Sedgwick. There is nothing inappropriate in the picture, and those who seek to make it something it is not are merely Trump haters who are using this as an opportunity to stir up drama, she wrote. There is nothing sexualized about the photograph. My father does not think I'm hot, and him posting a professional photo taken of me in a bra and pants does not mean he sexualizes me, she said. I understand we live in such a politically charged time, but I think we need to step back for a moment and think, are we fighting the opposing team just because they're the other team? I find it hypocritical that those who consider themselves liberal would criticize a woman embracing her body, the statement read. How would you feel if people thought your father was sexualizing you? Wouldn't you feel hurt and embarrassed?
7 amazing international vacations that won't cost a fortune. This article posted by Megan Leonhardt and Carrie Ann Renzulli. If Paris is too passé for your next international vacation, it's time to consider a more off-the-beaten-path experience. A number of destinations deliver great adventures and excellent value with fewer tour bus hordes. For this ranking, Money has scoured its best-in-travel database to identify 7 cities that may not be at the top of tourists' lists yet, but are packed with incredible things to do, delicious flavors to try, and unique places to stay. And for more travel inspiration, check out all 17 of the top destinations named in Money's 2017 Best in Travel. Number 1, Oaxaca, Mexico. Total cost of a week for two, $1,948. Forget Cabo and Cancun. Mexico's real gem sits in the foothills of the Sierra Madre. Oaxaca offers the best of everything visitors love about the country. Beautiful ruins, colonial charm, markets bustling with handmade crafts, and superb food. A flight to the area will set you back about $570, according to flight booking app Hopper, but the stay will be cheap. Hotel rooms are down 22% year over year, Hotels.com found, averaging $78 a night. Excursions, food, and trinkets have also become easier on the wallet thanks to a drop in the value of the Mexican peso against the dollar. Topping your schedule should be a visit to Monte Albán, which was an ancient capital of the Zapotec civilization and is now a World Heritage Site. Admission to the site costs less than $4. The Zocalo, Oaxaca's central square, is the perfect place to get a feel for the place's atmosphere. Stop at one of the many sidewalk cafes to watch marimba ensembles or brass bands play while hawkers try to tempt with crafts. Wander through the Mercado 20 de Noviembre to sample Oaxacan regional dishes such as moles, tasajo, tlayudas, pan de yema, chapulines, and large cups of spiced hot chocolate. Or dine in with the locals at El Típico, where you can try one of their daily moles. Number 2, Xi'an, China. Total cost of a week for two, $2,828. Much of Xi'an is a time capsule, both truly ancient and well-preserved. The city's biggest attraction is undoubtedly the Terracotta Army, a museum, $22 adult admission in high season. Just outside the city center walks visitors through the history of these 8,000 statues and the 1974 excavation that unearthed them after 2,000 years. Spend an afternoon exploring the city's ancient city walls, $8 to enter, which stand almost 40 feet tall and are the best preserved in China. Rent a bike near the south, Yangning, gate and take a leisurely ride over the over 600-year structure. You can fly into Xi'an Xianyang International Airport for under $1,000 on average, according to Hopper. Once there, the average hotel costs about $96 a night, according to Hotels.com. Number 3, Hoi An, Vietnam. Total cost of a week for two, $2,684. A UNESCO World Heritage Site, Hoi An has roots that can be traced back to a 15th century fishing port. Today, the coastal town, situated on the eastern Vietnam Sea, offers both historical sites and pristine white sand beaches. Among the many historical sites in Hoi An is the breathtaking Japanese-covered bridge built in the 16th century. Walking across the bridge is free, although there is a small fee to access the museum on the north side of the structure. If you're looking for adventure, take a tour in a traditional wooden long-tail boat. Hoi An Kayak offers a half-day tour, starting at $45 per person, to Cam Tan Village, where travelers meet bamboo craftsmen and share a home-cooked meal with a local family. The well-reviewed Vinh Hung Heritage Hotel offers modestly priced rooms in the center of the historic district. On average, hotel prices in Hoi An are down about 11% and average just $66 a night, according to Hotels.com. Number 4. Siem Reap, Cambodia. Total cost of a week for two, $2,445. Adventurous travelers will find spectacular sights in a lush jungle setting in this Cambodian cultural capital. Flights to Siem Reap are down almost 11% this year, averaging $812, according to Hopper. Once you arrive, get your bearings by visiting the Angkor National Museum, $12 admission, which focuses on the Khmer civilization, the predecessor to the modern Cambodian state. It's a great way to put into context the Angkor temples nearby, $37 for a one-day pass, which cover an area of almost 250 square miles. Allow at least a few hours to visit the Temple of Angkor Wat, the biggest and arguably most spectacular of these sites. If you're looking for a less traversed temple, check out the spectacular views from Phnom Bok, included in the Angkor Archaeological Park Pass, and located about 45 minutes outside the city by car. Siem Reap also has a lively street food scene, especially at night, with vendors that set up opposite the Old Market and near the Park Hyatt Hotel. Don't forget to try the potent local rice wine called Sra. Number 5. Krakow, Poland. Total cost of a week for two, $3,200. A bustling city full of medieval charm, Krakow is also one of the oldest in Poland. Hopper reports flights from the U.S. are down 5% over the past year, while the cost to spend a night averages $107, according to Hotels.com. In the main square of Old Town, you can listen for the trumpet signal that is played live on the hour from St. Mary's Basilica. For a quick bite, check out the city's milk bars. A holdover from Krakow's Soviet days, these former worker canteens now serve cheap, simple dishes like pierogies. Ustazi, located in Old Town, is a good bet. The remnants of the Holocaust loom large in Poland. Several tour companies offer tours of the old Jewish quarter of Kazimierz, and further afield, you can visit former concentration camp sites like Auschwitz and Plaszow, the latter made famous through the film Schindler's List. Number 6. Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. Total cost of a week for two, $3,306. Desert sands and pyramids spring to mind when you think of Egypt, but this city located on the Red Sea is perfect for those seeking beach days and water adventures. Getting here may require a couple flights, but there are some seriously good values for hotels available. Rooms go for about $100 on average, more than 40% less than they did in 2015, Hotels.com found. The Egyptian pound has also weakened against the dollar, allowing you to better take advantage of the top-of-the-line scuba diving and snorkeling trips. That's important because the main attractions here lie below the waterline. Experienced divers shouldn't miss a visit to Ras Mohammed National Park's southern tip. Named one of the best dives in the world by Lonely Planet, it offers views of sheer coral reef walls through dense arrays of fish and the remains of a Cypriot freighter. Less advanced divers may want to try Ras Sid for a dramatic drop-off that also teems with fish. Number 7. Sofia, Bulgaria. Total cost of a week for two, $2,725. After centuries of rule by a succession of empires, Sofia is left with an eclectic mix of Roman ruins, Ottoman-era mosques, domed churches, and Soviet military monuments. As with many European cities, both airfare and hotel costs have fallen year over year. Start your sightseeing at Alexander Nevsky Cathedral, whose golden domes are a striking symbol of the city. It was constructed to honor soldiers who died fighting for Bulgaria's independence during the 19th century Russo-Turkish War. The underground museum at St. Sophia Church holds an ancient necropolis and the remains of four other churches. Sample authentic Bulgarian cuisine at Manastirska Magernista, whose recipes come from a monastery. Or try an updated spin on the traditional fare at Moma Bulgarian Food and Wine, where you'll want to start with a shot of rakia. Methodology. To make the preceding selections, money weighed more than 14,500 data points for over 200 of the most popular international destinations. Then we ranked the top 7 cities that scored highest on overall cost factors, giving the most weight to the price of airfare, lodging, and food, as well as the biggest year-over-year price drops. We also considered the number of restaurants and attractions each city offered, as well as experience factors like low crime rates, pleasant weather, and ease of access to public transportation. Only one winner was chosen per country.
Spicy is back. Melissa McCarthy makes much-anticipated return to SNL as Sean Spicer. Melissa McCarthy's return to her role as White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer couldn't have come at a newsier time.
The actress and comedian returned to host Saturday Night Live after a whirlwind week in Washington, where President Trump made the historic decision to fire former FBI Director James Comey, a decision Spicer and the White House press team initially tried to defend by citing recommendations from the Department of Justice, only to have Trump contradict them later in the week. Spicer also became an internet meme again after the Washington Post reported how he huddled with his staff in the bushes while reporters waited for context on the Comey decision, only to clarify he was actually hiding among the bushes. McCarthy, who was spotted in Midtown Manhattan Friday on a motorized press podium, first emerged on the stage Saturday, anxiously peeking into the White House briefing room from the bushes, while his deputy, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, played by Aidy Bryant, fended off questions about whether she would replace him. McCarthy then bursts into the briefing room, spraying a reporter with a fire hose and taking over the podium. "That's right, Spicy's back, Sarah's out," McCarthy said. "Let's do this." She then proceeds to berate reporters asking about Trump's decision to fire Comey and whether it was related to the FBI's investigation into possible collusion between his campaign associates and Russia. "Trump is innocent," McCarthy insisted. "How do we know? Because he told us so. Period." Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the Daily Edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.